Back up on the plateau of rock that bled slowly into the lower slopes of the volcanic region, both Jack and Brian were moving swiftly toward cover. They had no idea if they were being watched, but suspected that the tracking party's attention would be focused on guiding the group in the passage exactly where they wanted them. They would notice two of the companions were missing, but could they afford the manpower to send back trackers to find them? Ryan was betting that they couldn't. Both men felt a palpable relief when they crashed into the cover of trees and shrubs that started to pepper the lower slopes, their feet all the more sure as they hit earth rather than icy rock. The biting edge was taken off the cold, the winds broken by the canopy of foliage, enabling them to breathe a little more easily, to see a little more clearly.
Which way?
Jack paused, his impassive face refusing to betray the intensity of his concentration. There was no movement to the north or west, but he could hear movement, detect the faintest of scents that told him that the trackers had moved through here recently, moving south and east, moving to intersect with the other companions as they reached the mouth of the passage where the trail led back into the tree line of the slopes.
There. There.
Let's do it. I'll go clockwise, you counterclockwise. See how many there are and how they're spread. Then meet at the mouth of the passage. Fill in the others.
What if they not want us meet up?
They'll want that. Right now they're wondering where the fuck we are. They'll be so relieved we've turned up and they've got us all in one place, they won't wonder what we've been doing until it's too late.
Something that may have been a smile, but more resembled a death's head grin, cut briefly across the albino's face before he left Ryan and set off on the track that would take him around the enemy, leaving Ryan, for the briefest second, to watch him go before taking off on his own course. This far down the slopes, the covering foliage was much more sparse than he would have liked. It enabled him to move swiftly and with ease, but also made it harder for him to conceal his considerable muscular bulk. Jack was short and more wiry than the Inuit, and Ryan was almost certain that these were their trackers. It would be relatively easy for Jack to conceal himself. Ryan, on the other hand, was taller and broader, and the lower slopes weren't ideal conditions for stealth. The ground beneath him was sure footing, and he moved from scrub to scrub, keeping close to the ground, the ferns and mosses disguising his footfalls, the low cover just about keeping him from view. He stopped periodically to take stock of his surroundings. He could hear very little above the howl of the wind and his own labored breathing. There was no sign of Jack, and certainly no sign of any trackers. From his vantage point, he had an interrupted view of the passage shaped by the rock formations. It was easy to see the four companions moving backward toward the point where the passage bled into the forest trail, and he now understood how simple their progress had been for the trackers to follow. So what if they were already at the mouth of the passage? They had to know that was where the others were headed. Why were they doing this? It nagged at him. It would have been easy to mount an attack and chill the companions at any point as they traversed the trail. And yet, chilling them didn't seem to be the objective. They were being directed. But where and why? He had a notion that it was back to the Inuit settlement. In which case, why had Thompson and his people allowed them to leave in the first place?
It just doesn't make sense.
Ryan took off once more, careering through the sparse undergrowth, the Steyr in his hands, primed to fire. He didn't want to initiate a firefight, not before the safety of the others had been secured, but he was ready if the trackers had other ideas. Jack, meanwhile, had made a much swifter progress, even though he had a greater distance to cover. The small, wiry albino found cover easily and skipped over tracts of open space without a thought. He treated this as though it were a hunt, and the opponents were animal rather than human. Unconsciously clicking into the frame of mind that had made him such a good hunter, he stopped thinking and acted on his instinct. Picking out small sounds from the maelstrom of noise that constituted a storm, even in this relatively protected area, he could tell that the tracking party wasn't near. Therefore, he could move freely for the moment, exercising speed over caution. He had no scent of human that he could pick from the animal musk around. Human smell was sharper, more pungent than that of other mammals. Sweat trapped in the clothing, souring over time, and penetrating the senses more than the free-flowing odors of wolf or bear. As with Ryan, Jack was able to see how clearly they had been exposed as they had followed the trade trail. Part of his mind was appalled at how open they had been, a lesson to be digested later. But right now, he had to ensure that there was to be a later. He slowed as he hit a denser growth of forest, partly because he would have to exercise caution now to ensure that he stayed silent and betrayed no sign of his presence, and partly because he had picked up the slightest change in the makeup of the surrounding noise, the constitution of the forest smell. There were people around here, well concealed, but not so much that they could deceive him. Jack slowed to a crawl. He knew he was approaching the intersection of the forest trail and the beginnings of the rock passage. Now he would be the hunter. He caught his first glimpse of their trackers, two men swathed in fur and hide, conferring by gesture as they overlooked the four companions making their way back along the path. He recognized one of them as Macindoe, the Inuit hunter they had journeyed out with. He was seemingly in charge of this expedition as well, as he dismissed the other with a final gesture and sent him scurrying off to his destination. Jack considered chilling the bastard. His hand was stayed by the knowledge that one small noise, one notion that the hunters were under attack, and the four companions were a sitting target. Besides which, the Inuit didn't seem as though they had at this stage a hostile intent. Macindoe had his sharps over his shoulder, and the man he had sent away was also carrying just the one blaster, and this over his shoulder. Maybe Ryan was right. Maybe they should just go along with this for now, see what it meant. Macindoe had no notion of how close he had come to buying the farm as Jack left him, following the other Inuit hunter at a distance. The man was a messenger of sorts as he traveled back along parallel to the rock enclosed trail, alerting four of his fellows that they should pull back. Jack returned with them. They had no idea he was here, and he could have easily taken them out before they had a chance to react or to locate the source of the attack. But once again he stayed his hand. He would play the long game this time. Ryan had by this time located some Inuit of his own, his suspicions confirmed. He had almost run into the messenger who scouted this area of the hunting party, only just avoiding a collision that would have given the game away. Both men were too stealthy for their own good, but fortunately the one-eyed warrior had been a little bit more alert. The Inuit hunter had no notion there was anyone else in the forest, and had been too relaxed to hear the sounds of movement. Ryan watched him pass from cover, before following as the messenger rounded up the rest of the party. They were headed back to the intersection of rock wall and forest. Would this be the moment when they chose to attack? Ryan followed at a distance and watched as the Inuit party made its rendezvous, assembling on either side of the forest trail. They were about 300 yards into the forest, and as he looked back, Ryan could see the four companions coming close to the mouth of the rock passage. The Inuit had to know that he and Jack were missing from the party, so why hadn't they tried to do anything about it? None of it made sense to him, but Ryan knew that their options were limited. The best he could do for now was to go along with what was happening and get back to his people. Jack had obviously had the same idea, for as Ryan dropped onto the trail, JB whirling and barely nearly loosing a hail of Uzi fire at him, Jack appeared at his back.
Whoa! Dark night. You should have called, Ryan. I nearly...
But you didn't. Listen, people. There's something strange going on here.
Ryan filled in the four companions on what had occurred since he had left them, and then listened while Jack told a similar story. The six of them had halted just short of the intersection, and yet they had drawn no fire, or even interest from those who had directed them back to this point.
What the hell do we do now? We can't try to go back.
Back which way? We either walk into their trap, or we try to get back through the storm and the crap on the trail, and they put us through this all over again.
Only one thing we can do, Mildred, and that's call their bluff.
Right, Christy. Come on, follow me.
Ryan led them past the intersection and about 200 yards into the forest. There was still snow and ice blowing here, stinging their eyes and skin, but they no longer noticed the raging storm.
Macindoe! We know you're there! You must know that we know, so come out and either fight or tell us what you want!
There was a pause. The companions focused their attention on the area ahead, all with blasters to hand except Doc, who blandly looked around as though not caring what would happen. It was obvious that in his current state he had little, if any, conception of danger. Jack jerked his head in the direction of small noises that alerted him to movement. The Inuit party was spreading down the area to the sides of the trail, moving toward the exposed party. Ryan noted Jack's motion.
Come on, man! We know what you're doing! Come out and fight, or we'll come in after you! We're like rats in a barrel out here, so we've got shit to lose!
There was another pause that seemed to reach to infinity, their nerves stretched taut and jangling as they watched and listened for the slightest sign of activity. Finally, they heard the rustle of foliage, and Macindoe stepped out of cover. Five of them snapped their blasters in his direction. The Inuit hunter had his sharp still flung across his back, and his arms were raised from his body as far as the bulk of fur and hide would allow. He had to have been sweating to see five blasters trained on him, but his flat features betrayed no signs of emotion. Gradually, muscles relaxed, tautness subsided, and plasters were lowered.
You're a lucky man.
You chill me, it's my problem. I got it wrong. But I'd buy the farm knowing you were following close behind.
So why haven't you chilled us?
Not my job. My job is to take you back to the vill.
Then why not just take us by force? Why all this blocking the trail shit?
If I try to force you, then it's a firefight, and some of you get chilled. Some of us get chilled. No good to anyone that way. Better to give you no option than to go back.
But why?
Come back and you see.
Ryan looked to his people, seeing in their expressions his own bafflement. If there had been a reason to keep them there, then why let them leave? And if it were a hostile reason, why not chill them now? And if not hostile, then what was the point of all this? There was only one way to find out. Ryan dropped his stire. Following his lead, the others let their blasters fall.
Okay, we'll go with it. Doesn't seem much choice anyway. Take us back. Let's see what the hell this is all about.
The rest of Macindoe's men came out of cover. All had their blasters secured, but the manner in which they clustered around the companion suggested that deviation from the intended route wouldn't be tolerated. Following suit, and Ryan's lead, blasters were secured, and the bizarre party began its trek back to the vill. It was certainly more pleasant to be going back into the warmer climes of the volcanic regions, where the foliage broke the winds and provided a canopy from the worst of the storm. They traversed the trading trail until they reached the point where the hidden access to the vill was located and plunged through into the forest. In a short time, they arrived at their destination to find things were not as they had been just a few hours before. The center of the vill was no longer an empty space. A canvas canopy, much patched and repaired, had been laid over the area, suspended on poles 8 feet high, pitched one in each corner of the clearing. Beneath the canopy were 6 tables, rough wood, with 4 legs and cross pieces to ensure that they could bear a large amount of weight. Each table had been daubed. At first it was hard to see with what, but as they approached, even under the dimmed illumination of the canvas covering, it was apparent that there were symbols painted in red and yellow, each table the same in those markings. There was no sign of any life. Usually there were people carrying out their work on the stoops of the huts and cabins, or going about their business. Now it was empty. Macindoe brought his party to a halt, holding out an arm to prevent the companions taking another step into the center of the vill.
Are you going to tell us what this is all about?
I think we may have already guessed.
Not my place. Wait.
The door to Thompson's hut opened, and he emerged, as though he had been waiting for them. Possibly he had. He was followed by a heavily limping man that they had seen around the vill. He was older and stouter than the Inuit chief, and his impassive face was heavily lined. As opposed to the skins and furs they had seen him wear before, he was now in a ceremonial costume of dyed black hide with a white yoke, with a headdress of small animal bones, around a broad-brimmed hide hat.
Are you going to tell me, then?
Figure you'd be a fool if you hadn't already worked it out.
So why did you let us leave?
Ha! Couldn't very well get this prepared while you watched. You'd have figured out what was going on and tried to blast your way out.
And we're not going to do that now?
You could try. But you're surrounded and heavily outnumbered. Plus, we're prepared for you. No, my friends. It was less trouble to let you think you could go on than guide you back here. Avoided unnecessary waste of ammo. Give us time to prepare and meet you're all here in one piece. Not armed. Or less than all. That's important.
Important for whom?
For us. In case you hadn't noticed, we're having a few problems here. Skydark was a judgment on the ways of the world, but the Lord was a little amiss. His own people got some shit as well. A lot of us born with problems, and now a lot less of us even born. A lot of barren women and babies that don't last more than a few weeks or months. Those that survive can adapt, that's the way of the world. But it's no good if there aren't any being born.
And you think we can bring new blood to you?
Hell no, we don't want outsiders among us. Hellfire and brimstone, boy, if that was the case, don't you think we would have mixed a little more with those on the trail? Shit. I know you wouldn't figure it out. When our 2 tribes mixed, the ones from overseas, the ones you call Scots and Irish, they brought us the Almighty, our Lord.
and they brought us other ways that worked for them on the islands they came from. Ways that had worked for centuries. Blood for boon.
Ah, the old ways. Pagan sacrifice to the moon and sun for bounty. Bound to be confused with Christianity in these outposts of civilization.
No one was listening to Doc. They'd got the gist and didn't care about the history.
So you sacrifice us? What makes you think we'd just lie down and take it?
Look around.
They did so, to find that the huts and cabins were discharging the entire population of the Ville, all armed.
Damn. You either die in a firefight, maybe slowly and painfully, or you let us take your lives for the glory of the greater good of the Almighty. It'll be quick, I promise you that. We don't mean to make you suffer. It's just that we need your blood for the Lord so he'll shine on us. We tried the others, but they were too evil. You came out of nowhere. You were sent.
The companions looked around as the Inuit closed ranks, moving in on them. So that was the idea. A human sacrifice to appease their gods and banish the taint that was making them barren. And this was not the first sacrifice. The condition of the ruined Ville they had first encountered now made sense. How many others on the route to Anchorage had also been decimated in this cause? Ryan drew his Sig Sauer.
You need us whole, do you? So I guess that means you can't chill us yet, or even blast us. One wrong move and your sacrifice is fucked, right? So if we resist, you can't fire on us without ruining your plans. Maybe you aren't as on top of this as you'd like us to think.
Ryan looked back over his shoulder at the others and could see the situation becoming as clear to them as it had to him. With the exception of the still-distant Doc, who was amiably smiling at their foes, the others began to reach for their previously secured blasters. Mildred grinned, withdrawing her ZKR as the Inuit closed in on them.
I do love it when you get logical, Ryan. Looks like it's time to cut loose a little.
Call them off, Thompson, or we'll start blasting.
The Ville inhabitants were closing fast, and soon any kind of blaster fire would be as dangerous to the companions as to their opponents in such an enclosed space.
Ah, horseshit.
JB cast aside the M4000 and the mini-Uzi, unsheathing his techno-knife. Both the shotgun and the SMG would run too great a risk of taking out his own at these close quarters. Jack had also eschewed the use of his Colt Python. The .357 Magnum hand blaster was too powerful to use in a combat area that was rapidly becoming as closed down as the center of the Ville.